and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on The Paranormal View.
And welcome, everybody, right here to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight. And those listening in the chat room, we appreciate you. And those listening from around the world, we appreciate each and every one of you also. Tonight, we've had a little bit of difficulty in producing the show. Seemed like
which makes the people listening around the world rather difficult.
Right. Well, they'll be able to hear it on the podcast. So we do appreciate them for that. Because we
listening to the playback. Oh,
yeah, we get a lot of listeners on the podcast.
Oh, did I fall off already?
No, you're still here. So with that, though, we got a great show lined up for tonight. Tonight we have with us Barbara Duncan.
Hello, everybody.
And we have Jeffrey Gould. Maybe. Is Jeff still with us, or did we lose him? No, it shows that he's here. I don't know where he went to. You guys still here, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Jeff, are you back with us? Where'd he go to? It shows that he's on. Oh, well.
Unmute your mic.
No. It shows that he's on, though, so yeah. I don't know where he went. Anyway, Barbara, do you have, did I send you a copy of the bio?
I did not.
I know Jeff's got it. All right. We got a little message here. What is that? Here it is. Am I on? No, you're not on. No, but it shows that he's on, but he's not on. So it shows three people in the call. So I don't know where he went to. Anyway, tonight we have with us, and when Jeff comes back on, we'll get him to go ahead and do the bio or do the intro. I've never had so much trouble. Duh. Okay. We have with us tonight, and I don't have the bio up, so we have Cody Knox with us, who is the director of the movie that is going to be made, Kecksburg. And we're going to learn all about it, about Kecksburg, and all about Cody Knox. So we want to welcome Cody Knox to the Paranormal View.
Hi, thanks.
People just disappeared. You have come.
It's the government. It's your government messing with it.
You're saying this is all one big conspiracy? No.
It must be.
Jeff is going to restart Skype, so he'll be back with us as soon as he restarts Skype. So that's good. Anyway, how did you get started, or what led you to do the movie Kecksburg?
Well, I saw Unsolved Mysteries when I was a child and saw the whole episode on Kecksburg. So I've always been fascinated with it. But then we did a film called Gore Orphanage, and my wife directed it and I produced it. And it was based on a local Ohio urban legend from a town near Sandusky, Ohio. Long story short, we had 1,108 people at the premiere. And so we did really well on it. And I said, why are we not doing more urban legends? Why are not more films being, not based on an urban legend, but why not just do the urban legend? I mean, you have things like Rosemary's Baby, which is based on the Devil of Hull House. And why not do the Devil of Hull House? Why not do these things that already, in my opinion, are pre-sold instead of coming up with some new story? I mean, you have to still make a script. You still have to come up with characters in many cases. In the case of Gore, it was just kids burning up in an orphanage. So you had nothing to work from. We had to create every character. Who are the children? Things like that. In the case of Kecksburg, we have John Murphy, who's a real person who died for this story. So that in itself is intriguing. He was a reporter, and I used to be a reporter. And I nearly got myself killed. So I understand. Oh, I did. I investigated it. I investigated our former district attorney, and I mean, he's deceased now. And it's weird because I actually like the guy, but long story short, he was the chief suspect in a double homicide. And then the feds were investigating him on a whole bunch of different charges. And either he, his political opponents, or both, or people around them, because I liked him. But long story short, they wanted to get rid of me. And I recruited a candidate to run against him that had no legal experience other than he just passed the bar. And he won. It was a Democratic county, 3-1 Democrat. He won 2-1 as a Republican with no experience and 20-some years old. Because the public started making homemade signs. I spent 6 years of my life investigating that. Actually, when I was working on a film with, I wish Jeffrey was on here, he would know, we got to meet Terrence Malick and his wife. And when I told them my life story, they wanted to know about me, so I told them the life story. And then they said, that's the best pitch for a movie we ever heard. And I said, that's not a pitch. That's just what I lived. I wasn't thinking about it as a film. So there's a lot to it because I had to pretend I was stupid for 6 years, which was loads of fun.
That's easy for me to do.
Well, I would walk into a restaurant and run into a table and make people's drinks spill over and misspell words in my newspaper and just anything to confuse them. In fact, at a point I was in a federal deposition and they were trying to find out the mastermind behind getting rid of the DA, and I can say it now because it's all done, but I wasn't even really involved in that suit. They just used this excuse to depose me. Long story short, the person they were looking for was me. And they're trying to get me to give up me, which was a really weird situation. I'm sitting there going, well, I can't give myself up. And they don't know. I mean, they couldn't believe that I was the person pulling the strings. They believed it was someone that I was working through me or were above me. It was just a very odd situation. And you couldn't trust anybody. I mean, the federal agents, nobody, everybody was out for themselves. It was an awful, awful thing. And it cost me my marriage.
Wow.
And I gained a lot of weight and lost a lot of weight since then. And now I'm remarried with a wonderful wife and nothing is my ex-wife. And I have a new baby. So I have an 18-year-old son and a 15-month-old son.
Wow. Oh.
Well, now there's something that I was going to ask to start with and forgot to do it right to start with. You are related to Mr. Don Knotts, right?
We have the same common ancestor, a guy named Samuel Knotts. He came over the mountains in the Monongalia County in 17-something, and then we all come from him.
Wow.
They always like to point that out. I'm much more closely related to a man by the name of Louis Wetzel, who Hawkeye in Marvel Comics, Hawkeye and Last Mohicans is based on.
Oh, yeah.
Louis is a first cousin, 4 times removed, 5 times removed. And if you know how first cousins work, a first cousin's closer than a second, even if they're not so many times removed, it's just in the past. But he is, both of my grandparents on my maternal side are related to Louis. He had no descendants. So there's nobody, he had no children. So were as closely related as anybody. And his brother Martin ran around with Daniel Boone, but he could run and load a flintlock, and he, to people in Appalachia, he's a hero. To the rest of the world, he's a homicidal maniac. But we're really proud of the fact that our family member is the only person, a comic book heroes act was created on a real person.
Amazing.
So, and they say he's the deadliest man that ever lived in Anglo-American history.
Really?
And I would love to make a film one day. Oh, yeah. There's sociologists that talk because he killed so many Indians, and he was so bloodthirsty, and so he was so fast. The reflexes, everything about he died at like 42. That's typhoid, if I remember correctly. But the government tried to kill him. And so, I mean, those elements, I mean, just like Murphy might have been killed by the government, those things are things that run deep. My whole family has a history. I named my son Nathaniel Felton because I'm related to Nathaniel Felton. If you go to Peabody, Massachusetts, he was the first guy to sign the petition to save John Proctor's life. I'm a descendant of his. And so I named my son after him because our family, good or bad, has a long history of being stubborn and stupid and risking our life for the right thing. And you know, my cousin says, my cousin's a judge. He says that you couldn't bribe us with $1 million. It wouldn't mean anything to us. Now, if you put a hot girl in front of us, we're in trouble. And that's, I think it's hilarious. He says it because it really is. Power doesn't mean anything to us. Women do. All the men in the family are stupid when it comes to women. You know, I'm blessed with my wife that she's been a saint, but that is, but they have constantly had a history of being brave back to the Lestranges and Guy Lestrange standing. Everybody knows the Lestranges thanks to Harry Potter, but the real Lestranges were from Normandy, and my family history is fine. I have 26 ancestors who's direct. I'm a direct son of 26 men who fought in the American Revolution.
Really?
So, yes.
Oh, the heck with Kecksburg. We need to talk about the ancestors all night.
Oh, it's, wow. And according to the legend, now there's a disputed member of the family because I'm descended from Hannah Lightfoot, who, if you look her up, may or may not have been the mistress of George III, uh-huh. May or may not have been his legitimate wife. And they interviewed my family in the 1930s. And a lot of people claim they were the George Rex. And I'm from the second son of that relationship, if it existed. Mm-hmm. And which means they have no claim to the throne. But long story short, always people claim that they were the people. My family begged people not to know. And I was never to know this. My mother threw a fit when I got into genealogy and said, you can't look at it, screaming at me, because when the Chicago Tribune came out in 1930 and interviewed her mother and her grandmother, they told them, let sleeping disgrace lie. They didn't want any publicity. They didn't want anybody to know. And I was a bleeder as a child.
Oh, wow.
Which is all the stuff that, you know, so it neat. I mean, and I had no idea. I mean, it really was neat to go through and find family members doing the same, living the same life again and again. I'm a believer genetics matters. I mean, you can't grow up on a farm and not think genetics don't matter.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, it's you know, you see it.
Yeah.
If you're in your eyes.
Wow.
Jeff, are you back with us now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, Jeff is back. Yay. So he has my bio, but he knows who I am.
I do know who you are.
We'd already
were you guys stymied as a bio? You just said, oh, here's our guest.
I have too many things open. I couldn't get to the bio.
Oh, okay. Well, for those who have come in late, a Taylorstown, Pennsylvania native and two-time candidate for Pennsylvania House of Representatives, Cody Knotts is a director, producer, writer, and actor, and is not one who is afraid of taking risks. Cody decided to pursue his life passion for filmmaking after selling his weekly newspaper, Weekly Recorder, and leaving behind the world of politics. He has written and produced 5 films, 4 of which he has directed. So welcome, Cody Knotts.
Hi. Oh, and you didn't even have the thing about getting 3 men out of jail, I think. That's the biggest.
You know, I figured that would come up. You know, I don't always put everything in every bio I have.
That's probably the thing I'm most proud of. Getting three men out of that were wrongly accused is something neat. I mean, two of them had to confess to a crime after being in jail for 10 years, and they were released that day if they agreed that they did it, even though everybody knew they didn't. But we got them out of jail, and that was the important thing. I mean, they weren't behind bars anymore. So, yeah, fun stuff. So you guys are asking the questions. I was a politician. I could talk forever.
Well, see, on our show, that's the way we like to do it, is ask a question and let the guests talk.
Forget about Kecksburg. Your stories are far more fascinating. No, I'm not going to say that.
I have some fun ones. I mean, the front of my newspaper actually had as a headline with this DA, it said, "Call me Daddy," because the feds had him on tape with girls from the jail and making them call him Daddy. And so I ran it on the front of my newspaper, and people said, and the former governor one time, who was attorney general at the time, said, "Cody, did he sue you?" And I said, "No." He said, "That should tell you everything." He goes, "That's fact, no, because I had it. I knew what he said." Can you say on the radio that it takes balls? Can you say you had balls? I was told that by
you. It takes chutzpah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and no less than Governor Ed Rendell told me I had balls. So that's why I had to get out of politics. It destroyed a marriage. The marriage was already rickety, but that made it worse. It's just not a good business, you know.
No, politics is not.
No.
There's too many of those anyway.
Yeah, you know, and where I lived at, it was played. James Carville said that you have to live here to even understand how it's played here, and so it was really rough and tumble.
Wow.
It was truly no holds barred, coming out of the coal towns, and you know, Jock Gabonski got shot here. We had people get killed, so it was not. You had to be balls to the wall. So filmmaking's a lot more fun.
Oh yes.
Wow.
Even if it's a government conspiracy, you know, I mean, like.
Especially if it's a government conspiracy.
Like 52 years, and the Clintons can't get the records. That's probably our funnest thing. I mean, what the heck is it that they can't tell Hillary Clinton? I mean, she requested them last year. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yeah.
She put in the Freedom of Information.
Didn't Bill Clinton also request access to Area 51 and Kecksburg files?
And they were not given. And I have huge problems with the fact that our elected government, our officials, don't have access to things. I mean, this is what's wrong. You know, Lincoln said it's a government for the people, by the people, and of the people. Well, these guys have forgotten that entirely.
Totally. There is a secret government behind the government that takes care of things that we know nothing about, and we couldn't get in to know anything about it, which leads me to believe that if they're doing that, then there is something there that they're trying to keep hidden. So something there's got to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm jumping the gun. I'm talking.
You're fine. They know a lot more than what they're letting us know, put it that way.
Well, I worked in it for years, and the idea that the Clintons were not given the records speaks volumes to me. Because why not? Why not just tell them? I mean, it's not like they're not great at secrets. I mean, everybody in politics has secrets. Every person on the planet has secrets. And there's all things we've done we're ashamed of and whatever. But what is so important they can't tell anybody? And so that's why this is fascinating to me and why we have to make this film.
I mean, is there that black ops group and a need to know. What do they call it? Plausible deniability. Is that what you think that they're trying to do?
I'll give an example. I won't say which congressman, but I sat with a congressman who was in a position to know when I worked in politics after September 11th. And I asked the question about Shanksville. Did we shoot the plane down? And he literally, he was on armed services. He laughed because he had a gallows sense of humor. Not laughing at them. Okay, but just, he said, of course we did. And we can't tell the public because they can't handle it. Now, that I understand. I don't agree with it. Okay, I think that people need to quit being babies. In that situation, it needed shot down. Period. That's it. Okay, we needed to create heroes afterwards. I understand all that, but I don't believe in doing it from lies. And I think that's, it comes from a belief that we are children. But the truth is, if you go to Europe and you talk to people that are educated people in Europe, I mean, I'm talking the middle class, not the upper class. They view Americans as children. We have a very childlike look at the world. We view everything as black and white. You know, I mean, and this leads us to keep making the same mistakes. It comes from our Puritan background, and we keep making the same mistakes. It's why we had in the 50s, let's go find the communists. It's why we had in the 80s and 90s, daycare scandal where we put all these people in jail and then had to let them loose. And I'm a huge believer in due process. It's why we had the Salem witch trials. Because we believe that a singular act makes a person bad. And we don't view the fact that most people are gray. And we can't wrap our heads around that. We want to go, they're bad people. And what we're generally doing is pointing a finger back at ourselves by doing that.
Well, there was a, I think...
Well, there's a big way to say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, very much so. But there's there was also that whole theory, especially in the 50s, when UFOs started to become a little bit more public, is the study that was done, I can't remember the person who did it, but was recommending that the public was not to be told because they were too naive, too scarable, and that it all should be covered up because the public
we can't handle the fact. This is going to sound awful from years of working in politics. We can't handle the fact that people who want power, okay, are either wanting power for power's sake, they're wanting power for money, or they're wanting power for sex. Okay, that's the only reasons they want it. And in the process of wanting those things, they do a lot of good public good, just like people who are greedy create companies that then employ people. And in our viewpoint, well, the company has to have some great corporate, you know, societal good. Or these people, well, why don't they do it for the greater good? Well, who does what for the greater good? I mean, Aristotle wrote about this ages ago, the fact that that which is cared for by everybody is cared for by no one. Because we all operate out of perceived self-interest. Now, if you understand that, then you understand what's motivating each person. That perceived self-interest is not bad. You know, some people want to feel loved. My mother took care of people that had harmed her in life because she wanted to forgive them. She also wanted them to love her. Okay? That made her feel good. That's her perceived interest. Okay? That's not a bad thing. But it's still operating out of an individual desire. And we act as though, well, why aren't they doing this for the greater good? What is the greater good? You know, with any decision you make, there's winners and losers. And so I think it leads us to these constant, like the stuff with Harvey Weinstein. Oh, my God, like no one didn't know this. You know, I mean, like, oh, shock of shocks. Not saying it's right. But it's also saying we're acting like we're shocked by something that, you know, what's going on with the elites of the country and what's going on the streets. I used to run a homeless shelter, okay? these people are not sitting around discussing these big esoteric things, hierarchy of needs. They're worried about how they're going to get a fix, how they're going to eat, how they're going to survive. They're not brushing their teeth. I mean, there's some real basic needs going on here, and nobody's worried about that. They all give lip service to it. Wait, it sounds like I'm running for office again. But I mean, that's what drove me to politics, because I wanted to see, you know, if I'm honest about myself, I like to feel important. You know, and I really try to read Thomas Merton. I try to be honest about me, and it's led me to, God's led me to a whole place of trying to forgive people of all things, like the Amish. I don't care what if people said, what does it matter with the crime? No, it does not matter. My job is to forgive them, because there, by the grace of God, goes I. I have made mistakes, so have they. They made a wrong act. They're not an evil person. They made a wrong act. Okay. And we spend too much time going, read how many people on Facebook write the words good person, bad person. It's all puritanical. And we don't even notice it. We do it so instinctually in our culture. Good, bad, we label them. And then we judge people on how much money they make. That's the other thing we do. My value as a human being is not how many dollars I make. Boy, I went on. And in many ways, I try to bring those things into the story, because John Murphy dies for an esoteric cause. What makes us different than machines? We get artificial intelligence and these things. And we have one of the top scientists in the world is helping us on the film. The guy that invented the search engine. I mean, it's just incredible to have him involved. And through him, I've met people who are working on artificial intelligence, and they really want to build Skynet. They're terrifying people sometimes. I argue with them constantly. But what makes us human, I tried to explain to them, as martyrdom makes us human. What makes us different is the fact that we're the only creature on the planet that will die for a cause. What's a cause? I mean, a dog will die to protect the pack, to save somebody that cares about. You know, a dolphin will rescue a human because it recognizes some sort of value in us. They also kill porpoises for fun, which the only creature besides man kills for fun. But we will die for a cause. I mean, my wife works for the Catholic Church. She was just watching the Popes, the history of the Popes, the documentary before we got on here, and she's, you know, St. Paul is hung upside down, or St. Peter. Mm-hmm. Why die for a cause? What do you get for it? From an evolutionary standpoint, you gain nothing. But we're driven by it.
Which is true. I can't see dying for something like that.
I mean, but John Murphy dies for this. So does the one gentleman, the Betters, which we have a black character in memory of him and other black individuals who were involved. But he, you know, we had two men die for this story. And so that draws me to it. To bring it back to Kecksburg, all of this draws me to those, what I consider real social justice, the idea that we shouldn't have a government that can lie to us.
Now it that I do believe that. And you got so many corrupt politicians, and by that I mean they'll sit there and lie to you just for their own sake and power and stuff, when it may not be for our good. So
they're afraid. I mean, if you run for office, and this is where I've had the experience of running campaigns, running for office, and now being on the other side, I never changed my belief that we should be honest with the public, but the public will treat you like crap for being honest. They'll believe the liar. And I always believe that we get the government we ask for. And I ran a campaign ad that actually said, I had polling that told me that the people in my district, that if you knew me, you were twice as likely to hate me as to like me. That's a tough thing to read. And I read it, and I went, well, I just risked my life for the right cause at the time. Okay. So I ran an ad that said, you might not like me, but I will do the right thing, even if it's not what you want done. Now, the weird part about that ad was, and then I brought in Profiles of Courage from Kennedy and all of this, it worked. The radio station said it was, of all the political ads they ever ran, it was the one that got the best response. I was blatantly honest with them. I said, I can be a jerk. I didn't do any bit of self-praise, you know, the praise and adulation. I did the opposite. I was very honest with them. This is who I am. And this is what you're going to get. And if you want honesty, then vote for me. If you want, you know, a pretty boy that tells you what you want to hear, vote for the other guy. He won. But we beat all the numbers because the district was overwhelmingly demographically against me.
Okay.
But Murphy, to get back to Kecksburg, in many ways I put into my own experiences into it. Because we made a few changes from the real life Murphy. We don't know that he served in the service, but we decided, given his age, that it would be nice to make him a World War II veteran because it's 1965 and he's in his 40s. And the reason is I wanted the juxtaposition between those men who fought in World War II, who believed they were fighting for government, for the people, by the people, and of the people, and a government that now lies to them, that has secret agents that operate, that are willing to kill their own citizens, and that people don't even know they exist. So we brought those elements into that. We wanted those two worlds to clash.
And there are also people who know they exist but don't want to acknowledge it.
Yeah, because fear is the single, you know, Frank Herbert and Dune had that line that fear is the mind killer.
Mind killer, yes.
And that was my college quote. I the Bene Gesserit chant. Because like I said, for whatever reason, my family's background, we have had a long history of being stupid and not being afraid. For me, it comes down to, and it'll be weird to say it's not paranormal stuff, it comes down to faith. My faith in God means that if I believe in him, I cannot be afraid of men. And whatever's supposed to happen is supposed to happen. And I have to put that first. To do otherwise means that I deny Christ. And I can't do that. And so I'm left with no other choice. It's not that I'm not afraid. I'm much, much more afraid of denying Christ. So I'm left with no other choice. And one time in my life, I ducked on a story. And to this day, I'm still mad about it. I still feel like I was a coward. And that will bother me because the person... I won't talk about who it was, but they ended up dead. They had come to me for help, and within a few days, they were gone. And I think our government got rid of them. So Murphy's story matters to me. It's makeup for that situation.
I take it you've seen Capricorn 1, obviously, right?
I have not.
Oh my God! One of the for its time, it was so ahead of its time for the idea of government disappearing people, because it's about faking a Mars landing in the 70s.
And, oh wow!
And they realized, well, we found out we really can't do it, so we're gonna put you guys in a hangar for the duration. We're gonna put you on sound stages, and we're gonna fake it, and then you'll come back and you'll be heroes. And unfortunately, the capsule on its return, the real one, burned up in the atmosphere. And they're like, well, and they realize, wait, that means we're dead. That means they can't let us out. And a reporter who is trying to find out about it has a friend working at NASA, and he begins to realize that the transmissions are coming more from Earth, seem closer than from Mars. So,
wow.
All of a sudden, he's no longer at his station. The reporter goes to his house. Not only is there a woman living there, but all the evidence in the apartment indicates she's been living there for years.
Hmm. Wow.
Their ability to do things, I mean, this is why, to give away something that's in the film, we have Robert Byrd as a character in the script. And it's part of this, we're going to film in West Virginia. And he is there as the U.S. Senator who doesn't know what's going on. So we have someone to do some exposition to. So that when the president's making decisions with the head of the Men in Black, he's drugged Byrd along. And Byrd's like, what? I mean, you know, you have this agency and you want to do this and you're doing this and there's aliens and there's, you know, because he's the audience. Yeah. A very intelligent audience. But, you know, the third longest serving senator at that time, he ends up being the second. But we thought he was an interesting character, not realizing how much he was going to be back in the news again. But it was a sop to West Virginia. And so, you know, we wanted someone who is considered to have done some awful things to not know what's going on in the government. And if he couldn't, who does? You know, but Johnson, obviously, is the kind of guy that knew everything in the government. LBJ's a lot of fun, and I'm just hoping that the actor we made the offer to accepts, because it'll be really great. Because it's hard to find someone that looks like Lyndon Johnson. He's very distinctive, and a lot of the people that have played him don't look a lot like him. And we found somebody that's a name actor, and they have the script, so we wait.
Right. And hope that he accepts. All right.
Yes.
I think what we're going to do is go ahead and take a break. And we'll come back and continue with Cody Knotts and talking about Kecksburg and a whole lot of other things. So I'm going to let Jeff take us out, and then I'll bring us back. So be about 5 minutes. Jeff?
Okay. Well, you're listening to The Paranormal View on para-x.com with your hosts, Henry Foister, Ceiling Cat, Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's guest filmmaker, Cody Knotts. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
From the author of the Ghost of Hollywood series and Workplace Spells comes a book for all lovers of pets, Animal Spells and Magic by Marla Brooks. Learn how to choose your next pet according to their astrological sign. Explore animal superstitions. Learn 25 magic spells for your pets and get instructions on creating your own spells. Learn who to call upon and what to use to cast these spells. Includes special chapters by Reverend Tim Shaw, Psychic to the Stars Kenny Kingston, Psychic Medium Victoria Gross, Animal Communicator Dinah Roseberry, and Shaman Willie Windwalker Gibson. This is the perfect book for all animal lovers. Animal Spells and Magic by Marla Brooks. For details on how to get your copy of this amazing new book, go to www.schifferbooks.com or check out Marla Brooks online at www.marlabrooks.com. This would make the perfect gift for the animal lover in your life. Go to www.schifferbooks.com or ask about it at your local bookstore.
Are you psychic? Do you often have dreams that come true? Do you have an interest in hypnosis or astrology? If you'd like to learn more about classes, events, and books on metaphysics, then go to our website, www.theartofmediumship. This is Elaine Kosmaskis, director of the New England School of Metaphysics and author of The Art of Mediumship.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
So, Tim, around here at Para-X, we're considered oldies because we've been here so long, right?
You know, yeah, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with oldies. In fact, you know what? I really love oldies.
Well, yeah, me too. I mean, it kind of takes me back to a time when my cauldron had training wheels and the Black Cat Lounge was called the Black Kitten Lounge. Sometimes I miss the good old days.
Sis, there's no need to miss them at all, because all you'll have to do is turn on and listen to Rock with the Shock.
Rock with the Who?
No, little sis. No, not the Who. The Shock.
Hey there. I don't know if you've heard, but there's a great new radio show on Para-X. Two hosts, 1 hour, and too much fun. Stephanie and Heidi not only talk about the latest goings-on in the supernatural worlds, they live it. They want to hear from you. They want to help you understand and guide you. And they want you to tune in. So, grab a friend or come alone to gather around that metaphysical table with Heidi and Stephanie. If you're interested in the worlds of the unseen, tune in to The Gathering Radio Show, Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Para-X Radio.
Hi, this is Master Tarot Card Reader Ken Bogle, and I highly encourage you to tune in every Monday night to the Para-X Radio Network for The Para-Cave, hosted by Matt Gesso, as he goes in search of the truth in the supernatural, metaphysical, mystic, and paranormal. Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, only on the Para-X Radio Network. I never miss it, and neither should you.
Hi, I am John Zaffis, and you are listening to Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight and being with us. Appreciate it. And I'm getting a bunch of feedback.
Yeah, it's your own feedback, too.
Oh, it's not my feedback. But anyway, wonder where that's coming from. So, we got back Barbara Duncan.
I'm still here.
And we got Jeffrey Gould.
Hello.
And we got Cody Knotts.
Howdy.
All right. He's still there. Good. Yeah, I don't know where that feedback was coming from. Have you got a microphone or something, Cody?
No. Well, I'm just...
I wonder where how it's coming back in. Oh, well, I don't see where it's at on my end. But it sounds like it's gone away now, so that's good.
Not so much.
Maybe not. All right. Anyway, getting back to,
Barbara. Don't be distracted by a hammer. Just go bubble through it.
I don't know where it's coming from.
My mic was off.
Oh, well. All right, here we go. Doing the movie Kecksburg. First of all, are you into the paranormal?
I approach it from a Christian perspective. One of the things that kept me alive, if you know anything about the gifts of the Spirit, was the gift of discernment. So I have seen things my entire life. I have seen evil spirits. I have seen since I was a child. And I never talk about this because when you're running for office, you don't want to tell people, by the way, I've seen evil spirits. But now that I'm out of politics, I can talk about it. And so I could actually see that. And then as I got older and because I didn't want to, I didn't. So like the movie Constantine was, I cried the first time I watched Constantine because Rachel Weisz's character and the fact that she doesn't want to see these things was my experience. It was like a weird mix between that and John Constantine, the line where he talks to Gabriel and says that you can't have faith because you know, struck me deeply.
One of my favorite movies, too.
So,
have
you ever been on an investigation?
I have prayed over people that were demon oppressed. I've prayed for people that have been in that situation.
No, he means a ghost hunt.
Have you ever been on a ghost hunt?
I've not went on a ghost hunt, and it probably has a lot to do, sort of. I should say, I worked as a security guard at Bethany College in West Virginia, and there was a lot of places that were haunted. I never encountered anything, but I went into them, again, from the Christian perspective of if this was something tormenting people, it was an evil spirit, and I would go in praying and going through the same rituals you would if you were going into something like that. So then I didn't encounter anything.
Well, not all earthbound spirits are either tormenting others or even tormented themselves. I worked in an office building in downtown LA that I had female stiletto heels follow me in empty corridors. I had male feet walking down empty corridors down where I worked down the cellar and right up to the metal gate of the room I was in. It used to be a bank, and I was a files curator, and I could hear footsteps coming, and it was so natural. I'm like, oh, somebody's coming down to get an invoice. And I'd come to the gate, and I'd hear the footsteps come right up to the gate, and there'd be no one there. And I was like, oh, okay, another ghost. And I'd just sit back down and go back to work.
Yeah, I'm probably way too traditionalist in the way I've approached it, but that's yeah, that's the viewpoint we all come from, is our own personal experiences. But I've had an evil spirit come over me and I couldn't breathe. And I had to say the name of Christ and it went away. I've seen the spirit at my window where you shouldn't be able to see anything. And yet it was there. So that's been a huge part of my existence. But I ran from it. And in many ways, I wanted to purposely not have that situation. I've had my bed pick up and move. I mean, I never say these things. This is weird. I mean, because you just don't you don't run for state house and discuss it. Oh yeah, my bed moved, and so
maybe the entity was saying you need to clean under here.
What's that?
Maybe the entity was just saying, you need to clean under here.
No. But and I went through the long, dark night where I couldn't feel God and feel his presence. And I needed that because I needed to experience what those people who don't know him feel. I never knew that. I can't tell you other than that experience what it was like not to know that the supernatural existed. And that it was real. And it's probably why I'm so skeptical of these guys who want to create artificial intelligence and things like that, because they're denying. I had a friend from Haiti who put it best. He said, in your country, science is your religion. And you deny what we all know is real. The soul, the spirits, we all know they're real. And you deny it in the name of science. And he found it appalling to run a whole country like that. And he was an educated man.
Well, with Kecksburg, it deals
with
It deals with what was supposed to be a UFO, supposedly.
Yeah.
So do you classify UFOs as being bad, you might say?
No, not at all. We have little alien statues that we have on our crowdfunding that people can buy. They're made by art students in Morgantown High School.
Oh, the little Marquettes that are on the Twitter page?
Yes. There's two little statues of them.
One looks like he's got a cold and ready to sneeze.
They were actually, their bodies were big. We wanted them to be kind of happy, so we based them on my son's body, which is kind of funny, my 15-month-old. So they have baby body. Gary Kittle drew them, and then the kids turned them into statues. But the aliens are, it's a lot like Twilight Zone. The aliens aren't the bad guys. They're just here because, you know, their ship didn't work right. They land. I mean, and what's really cool is we took the dimensions of what people said they saw from the truck, the M35A2. And Michael Malden, the guy who invented search engine, the spider that makes the search engine work, decided what would go inside of it. And so we wanted to get the best scientists we could get a hold of, and he was the founder of Lycos. And I went to Michael and said, will you do this? And he debated it for about half a minute and said yes, because it was exciting to him. And he took what people said, you know, the shape was, and said, can I fit 2 4.5-foot tall creatures inside of it that are sitting and functioning and able to move around? And the result was yes, that it could have held 2 4.5-foot tall creatures. And so then he built the whole design. He took the outside hieroglyphics or whatever they are on the outside of the ship and made a whole language. So he created a language based on the symbols on the outside of the ship just for this film. And he worked with Dr. Nathan Morehouse, who's an evolutionary biologist from the University of Pitt. I believe he was the University of Cincinnati now. University of Pittsburgh to the University of Cincinnati. And Dr. Morehouse is a specialist in stuff with eyes and animals and insects, and he helped him come up with what these creatures would be like. And then we created the body. And Dr. Malden says he loves the idea that they have a pot belly, because he said if they travel in space that long, they're not moving around much. So they got a little pot belly. And, you know, instead of them being all lean and scary, so we created the Kecksburg Gray, you know, so in part was from the eyewitness accounts. And we've been really excited because Stan Gordon, who's done more work on Kecksburg than anybody, has finally agreed to be, to do something as a special feature on the Blu-ray and to be supportive of the project. And that was a big moment for us.
So this is still in pre-production.
Still in pre-production. We have two more roles to cast. For an independent film, it's massively ambitious. We have a Harrier jet that's been donated. It'll be flown in by Lieutenant Colonel Art Knowles, who's the only retired Lieutenant Colonel. He's the only person who owns private Harrier jets in the world.
That's the one that takeoff and landing, right?
Yes. That's how our men in black are going to arrive.
Nice.
Yes, and the Harrier jet was invented in 68. This is 65, but we figure space age technology, they can be a few years ahead. And it's hard from a film to pass up a Harrier jet. We've had military vehicles donated. Obviously, Dr. Malden donated his time to create the language and design the spaceship. And we're working on who's going to build the spaceship, because we're hoping to get, we're in the process, we want to donate it to the town of Kecksburg, and we're talking to the state of Pennsylvania about making a museum. And that this is all to generate tourism, because Roswell makes $95 million annually, the same as Gettysburg, and Kecksburg's making nothing. And it's in the Northeast, and it could be a huge tourist attraction, but we need the film needs to happen to help drive it. It can't just be documentaries. It's got to be the something that captures popular culture.
So how close to the actual storyline of Kecksburg are you actually making the movie?
John Murphy investigates it. The fire department responds. Those are all things that happen. Three boys are in the woods that the Army chases. We have that. John Murphy in real life dies by being hit by a car. We won't necessarily say how John Murphy, if he does or doesn't die. But, yeah, we're following the events, the main events, the things that are known very closely, but we're filling in the gaps. And, you know, there's always little things you have to take into account. Like the woman who called the radio station, we created a character who makes the phone call to the radio station that John Murphy responds to and made her the fire chief's wife. So we connect the characters a little better. So when the fire chief goes out, we've already met his wife also, and she makes the call. So there's mixed people. The only person based on the absolutely real person is John Murphy.
Hmm.
Well, we don't know the name of this colonel.
Yeah.
But the men in black visited him, according to the stories at the time, and we had them visit him at the radio station when he goes to do the object in the woods. And our main man in black is played by a real-life FBI agent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, isn't that cool? So we had to send it to supervisors, and the FBI had to look over the script, and his supervisors had to say it was okay for him to be in the film.
Ow. So have you had any visitation from the secret people of the government saying you can't do this or you can do that?
No, and I doubt they would, because when I used to run my newspaper, I met with Congressman Murtha before, and there was a story we were running, and he said, well, they'd listen on your phone, Cody. So I'm sure they already know. Well, when I ran the stuff on the DA, the local FBI office, I called them one day at the archives, and the woman said, oh, you're Cody Knotts. She said, well, we all read your newspaper, so they know who I am. And I accept that. I mean,
So they listen to you all the time.
So now, I don't know anymore. When I got out of politics, I don't think so. But they did at the time because they were hot and heavy on the investigation, and they used my newspaper to deliver messages. And both sides, organized crime and the FBI, used my newspaper to deliver messages to each other. So I referred to the FBI as Super 8 Men, because they were staying in a Super 8 in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. And so the mob knew that when I said Super 8 Men, that meant that was the FBI. And the FBI knew it, and everybody was exchanged. They had to communicate with each other, and they needed a way to do so. They used the pages of a thing we called something called Secrets. And in the Secrets, we would write these weird cryptic messages, but they were delivering back and forth.
So now they're going to be keeping tabs on us.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, I think that ever since I got away from being involved in politics, you know, that's the nice part. I got out of it. I decided to make really bad, a couple bad horror films, and then it was like, okay, we'll leave Cody alone. I mean, The one I hate to talk about because it's horrible, but we made it for $5,400 and ended up in the London Times because it was so stupid. and a bunch of people in Hollywood decided, that's a great idea. Let's copy that dumb idea he made a film on. And I was like, oh, great. And when I saw it up on Mad Max and stuff, I went, why would anybody copy that idea? And so, you know, something like to talk about the idea. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think the idea of pro wrestlers battling zombies is a good idea.
That was a good idea. That one I like. That's not the one I don't like. No, I liked it. Pro wrestlers versus zombies. The only problem there was we didn't have enough money. We filmed it in 13 days with stunts. that was insane and stupid, and it needed a lot more money and a lot more time, and it wasn't the wrestler's fault because they would have done anything. It was, we couldn't even do the things we hoped. And it was like, oh, we have this guy for a day. We have this guy for 2 days. What are we going to do? And get it done. And you just, we just shot nonstop. The executive producer slept under 2 hours in a 13-day period.
Well, you'll have to ask Maria about the movie Live in Fear she and I worked on that she produced and starred in. It came out on DVD as Consumption, and it was literally filmed in, I think, 5 to 7 days, almost nonstop. We got there and started filming immediately, which we meant originally we were going to start the next day, and we just started pummeling it out, and at like 2 or 3 a.m., we were all just dying, and the director said, I think we should stop now. And we all got some desperately needed sleep, and then we were able to just continue on from there. But it was both a fun shoot and a little bit of a it was interesting. I don't even know how much that cost to make.
She encouraged me to act more because she watched me in the film, which I hate, and said, because I appeared in it myself to save money. And she said, Cody, you do a lot of interesting things here. And I go, how are you even noticing it with how bad this film is? Okay. You know, so when we worked together, she watched everything that I had made. Like, we watched it together, and that was interesting. She hated pro wrestlers.
Is your stuff on Netflix?
Gore Orphanage is on Netflix, and Pro Wrest... No, they're not on Netflix. They're on Amazon. They're all on Amazon.
Dang it.
With Amazon Prime, we have pro wrestlers, and Gore is on there, and Lucifer's Unholy Desire, which is the first film I made, and with that horrible name that everybody thinks it's a porn.
Plus, it sounds redundant. I can't picture Lucifer having a holy desire.
Well, it was an argument. We had the title Unholy Desire, but some Japanese film had that name, and we thought about Lucifer's, but other things have been called that. So we made this really bad group decision to put all three of them together. And it's really the demon in it is Lilith. It should have been called Lilith. It was really dumb of us on every level. But in fact, I got to work with Andrew Roth, who was going to play John Murphy, and that's how I met Andrew. And I loved working with Andrew. And so I wanted to do something with him again, and have been hunting for a way to do that. So, you know, because Andrew's Mr. Seven. He'll never give you an 8 performance. He'll never give you a 6. It's always a 7, but it's always consistent. And John Murphy needs to be that for the script.
I'd probably do about a 1, maybe.
But he'd be consistent.
Now, do you believe that what crashed there was a UFO or space junk?
I do not believe it was Russians. I do not believe it was a meteor. I do not believe it was one of our satellites and all the different ideas. I believe it was something that they can't tell us. Now, what that means, that's a bigger story. So,
do you think it was a controlled craft?
Yes. Because of the way it entered the space. And Dr. Malden and I have talked about that, and he said it's hard not to come to the conclusion that there must have been some sort of control by the way it entered. And I've talked to Stan Gordon about that, and that makes sense also. And I think that's one of the things that doesn't add up. When all the people come up with their explanations, because it's moving in a way that seems controlled.
I think what we're going to do is go ahead and take our last break. And when we come back, we will talk more about what it was that crashed and what actually happened according to all the events. So I'm sure that you know what they are, what they all are. And we'll find out how that goes. So, Jeff, you want to take us out?
Yep, you're listening to The Paranormal View here on Para-X with your hosts, Henry Foister, Ceiling Cat Barbara Duncan, and myself, Jeffrey Gould, with tonight's guest filmmaker, Cody Knotts. So stay tuned for more of The Paranormal View after the break.
I found it at last! Marla's sacred cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron!
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going!
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
In order for the light to shine so brightly, the darkness must be present. Tune in every Monday at 10 o'clock for Dark Sun Rising on the Para-X Radio Network.
I'm Jenna Valadez with The Basement Files. Tune in Friday nights, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rosalyn Bound, and you are listening to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network.
Rhett! Rhett! Where are you going?
I'm going back to The Paranormal View, back where I belong.
Please, please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear...
Line.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's The Paranormal View, your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan, every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
We all go through life secure in the knowledge of who we are. But what would you do if one day you found out that you grew up in a family that wasn't quite as normal as you were led to believe? You see, the world around us is very complex. It's made up of many layers. And when you start to peel back those layers, either by choice or by accident, you just might discover a hidden truth. The magical world and the mortal worlds are intermingled, with no physical boundary between them. It's all a matter of perception. In Shelley Gordon's case, it's also a matter of destiny. And what she uncovers about herself after her chance encounter with Timothy Titchmarsh, a mysterious little old man with a twinkle in his eye, changed her life completely. He told her of shocking, carefully guarded family secrets that had been unspoken for many generations. But the biggest shock of all was learning that she was not only a witch, but the great-granddaughter of an elite sorceress who tragically died before she could carry out a vital and perilous task that Shelley was now fated to complete. The thought of having to learn the craft, integrate herself into the magical world, and risk her life to finish the task is enough to give anyone a bad case of the collywobbles. Marla Brooks' new fiction book, A Bad Case of the Collywobbles, is now available at Amazon.com in both paperback and Kindle formats. Visit our website at marlabrooks.com to find out more.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And welcome back, everybody, right here to the Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here with us tonight, and hope everybody is having a great time. We have with us back Barbara Duncan.
I'm still here.
And Jeffrey Gould.
Hello, hello. I have a question, by the way, Henry.
You do? All right.
Yeah, that's Tim Shaw doing the Collie Wobbles thing for Marla, right?
No, that's Steve Shockley.
Oh, that's Steve. Okay.
Yeah.
Sound like Steve. That is the longest elevator pitch ever. I mean, that just goes up. I'm like, that's not quite what's called an elevator pitch. It's just it's like that synopsis was so long.
And we have back with us Cody Knotts.
Hi.
And I would ask Marla. Jeff. I would ask Barbara if we've got listeners from around the world, but I guess we don't, do we, Barbara?
Well, they will be listening when this airs, but yeah.
When we do the replay, they will be listening. So, I know, Barbara, you've got a ton of questions, I'm sure, and you haven't even got started yet, but with the thing at Kecksburg, on December the 9th, 1965, a fireball crossed over Ontario, Canada, and six U.S. states before crashing in a wooded area in Kecksburg. Now, once it crashed, what was the story behind it? I don't think little green men got out and started running around everywhere, did they?
Not that we know of, but there is people that believe that a body was taken out and they saw three digits with scales. So
really?
There was eyewitnesses who said that that had happened thanks to Stan Gordon's research. And there was a lot of people that state police that said they couldn't talk about it, that told their family they couldn't talk about what they saw. Whatever that object was, the object in the woods, as John Murphy liked to call it, there was people, John Murphy at least had pictures of it that were taken from him. That's why he was going to go public with it. And so there was something, there was blue smoke. And, you know, that's one of the fun things we've had to discuss. We want to make sure we have that in the film. So, you know, that people get there before the military, but not much before the military. The National Guardsmen that come through with the Air Force come down Route 51, and they're there awful fast, given that people are responding, the fire department's responding. They respond to 1951 Mack, which they still own, which will be in the film. We actually love the actual fire truck that responds in the film.
Hmm. Wow. So you've accumulated a lot of stuff from the, I would say, that was there during the time when this took place.
Well, we've been working with the Kecksburg Fire Department, and they have, you know, they have an annual festival, and they make, you know, a few thousand dollars on it, and that's how they fund their fire department. But they have a massive interest because they know this could help their town. And they've been very helpful, and obviously they have access to the original turnout gear that the firemen wore. And when you're making an independent film, my wife does costuming, and she performs all over the country as different historical figures. And so we're really into this. We have rooms full of clothing. But things like firemen's turnout gear are really expensive to make. So we're lucky that they have this. And the fire truck, obviously, having the original one, it's going to be amazing. So we've accumulated everything we can.
Have you been able to interview any of the firemen that was there when it happened?
I have talked to people who claim they were the boys in the woods. The firemen are long gone.
because of the age they would have been. It's been 53 years. Now, maybe it was someone in their 20s, but I haven't been able to find them. But I have talked to people that claim they were the boys in the woods, one of which goes to the blind association with my father-in-law. And so I had a blind man giving me his recollection of what he once saw. It's the joke we have sitting around. He's a very nice gentleman. And so it's weird, though. We have so many people that claim they were out there in the woods that night, that I've almost wanted to put at the end of the film a whole bunch of people standing in the woods all staring at it going, we were there, because it's become a thing that you say if you're of a certain age. I was out there that night. I was there. Whether they were or not, in Pittsburgh, it's a lot like the Immaculate Reception. Everybody saw Franco Harris catch that ball, but it was actually a blackout of the game, and almost everybody had left by that point. So there was only a few thousand people that actually saw him catch the ball, but everybody says they did.
I was going to say that would have to be really popular woods for everybody to be out there.
Oh, it must have been just buried in people. I mean, I just went for a reading for some play I'm reading. We're doing a public reading of, and the woman's uncle that we were at her house came over and said, "I was in the woods that night," and I just was like, "Yes, of course you were." I'm just getting very used to everybody was in the woods.
So have you been out into the woods and maybe to the actual place where the thing was supposed to have landed?
I've looked at it from the road. I was taken out there by the fire department. The owners of the property are not big fans of this whole situation. So they're very, they've let Stan out there, but they didn't even let Ancient Aliens go up to the site when they had Sukulakis, and Stan took him out there, but they couldn't go all the way down. So they're very protective of it because they have a working farm. And I grew up on a farm, so I get it. Even though I would be like turning it into a way to make money, because farming doesn't make money that much. But, you know, that's their property. That's why they, you know. So, but they're supportive of the fire department, and they know it's important. So they let Ronnie drive people out and point at it.
Huh.
So that's the closest I've come. I mean, we went there. We've actually found the longitude and latitude so we could create what it might look like inside the ship as they're coming in. Malden did all of that. He had me find the location and the, you know, the longitude and latitude. And he said, okay, now I can make this whole scene like it's coming in exactly as the sky looked that night.
Wow.
Well, and we want it to be as real as possible.
That sounds pretty interesting. The government, how soon did the government get there, or the military, after it was supposed to have been crashed?
I am trying to remember the exact. I wrote out a timeline because when I was a reporter, I used to write timelines because I would find things that you don't see unless you put a timeline down. And I'm doing this off the top of my head. I don't have it right in front of me, but I'm thinking it was 10 or 11 minutes, which is not very long, given they were coming all the way from Pittsburgh. Unless you lived here, Kecksburg, you can look on a map, but it's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's just, you know, it's in the far corner of Westmoreland and Fayette counties in the woods, where they've had a lot of stories of Sasquatches and things like that, which tells you how rural it is. Because you don't see Bigfoot running around Pittsburgh.
That's because he's so good at hiding.
Maybe so. I mean, they believed that we had a Bigfoot invasion here in the 70s, and they came down on rainbow things. And one of the pictures they showed me looked like the guy with the Sasquatch was dancing disco down a rainbow bridge, and I went, that looks very 70s to me. I love the 70s. Like, if I could have my druthers, I would have 70s music. But, you know, we have Ricky Nelson's granddaughter in the film, and so and we're gonna have some Ricky Nelson tunes in it, so that fits the 1960s really well.
Wait a minute, there was a Bigfoot invasion?
Well, every state has Bigfoot.
But
every
single
state. Yeah, but they believe that in the 70s that Bigfoot Sasquatches came from outer space and invaded here. Now, I will. I don't even know what to say about that. The guys, they are helping me with the film. They are wonderful people. I just can't go there with them on this. I find the imagery they have really cool with the rainbows and the Sasquatches dancing down there. All I do is picture the Bee Gees and, you know, staying alive and the Sasquatches dancing.
I think that they want to correlate Sasquatch with UFOs also, because they'll say, you know, when you see UFOs, then you might see Bigfoot, and then they leave on UFOs. So that's why you never can find them.
Yes. And they had, and someone just did a really, on Mothman and this, they did a really successful documentary crowdfunding. And they raised like $24,000, which for their level of documentary was really good. And they did it on, one was on, they did two, Mothman and then the Sasquatches and the UFO at Kecksburg. And they're really cool guys, the small town monsters. So here I'm giving him a plug. I'm still thinking about the ice cream.
Oh, Mr. Cheese.
The sponsor you have. My wife and I go to Gettysburg. We do historical impersonations of Civil War figures. And
oh, well, good.
We're going to go for Remembrance Day. And now I have to go and have, like, haunted ice cream as Judah Benjamin. Because I portrayed a Confederate Secretary of State, which is no one in the country does but me.
Have you ever Mr. G's?
I have not, but I'm sure Mr. Benjamin will, and she does Mrs. Greenhow most of the time. We will absolutely love it. And, you know, since I'm the Dark Prince of the Confederacy, which is has to be one of the most awful people to portray.
Mr. G's is in one of the homes, used to be a home right downtown, on the main stripper. It was fought in the Civil War. He still got bullet holes in the place. It is haunted. We go there every time we're in Gettysburg. We've done our show from there, I don't know, 5 or 6 times.
You'll have to let us know when you're going to be there, because my wife's clothing, maybe they'll come out and talk to someone who's in true period gear clothing. It's not costumes, it's clothing. And she's been at the Spy Museum, National Park, because they had her on the book tour when they did the book on Rose Greenhow. She's exceptional. And that's not because she's my wife. It's incredible what she does with clothing. And I've showed it to people in Hollywood who are looking at doing Civil War stuff. And they're like, we should hire her. And I'm like, yeah, because you can do it cheaper and it look right instead of this costumey crap that people are putting on screen, that they always get the women's clothing wrong. It's always the women's clothing that they screw up because they have no idea how it works. She wears it up.
Rose Greenhow was a spy, wasn't she? And she died going back into Wilmington on a blockade runner with gold tied around her neck.
On our honeymoon, we went to Wilmington, among other places, and my wife actually went out into the water where Rose died so she could feel it, because she does Rose more than anybody in the country. And
really?
She's done her since she was 14 years old, she's portrayed Rose, but the Spy Museum has her in all the time to do this, National Park. And she was on the Random House book tour when they did a book on Rose. And it's really exceptional how she becomes the person. And she's right now doing an annotated bibliography of Rose's book. So we believe that the reason Lincoln said that, if you want to know what's going on in my cabinet, ask Mrs. Greenhow,
right,
is because she was having an affair with Seward. We believe that was the big secret, because it's when Rose went into jail and she went into prison that day. The next day, Seward's wife agreed to come to D.C.
Wow.
There's a whole bunch of things. When you do the timeline, you're left with why she said, put me on trial. There'll be rich revelations. They could not afford to lose Seward, and if the country knew that Seward's loose lips caused them to lose Manassas, and hence the war continued, then they would have had to get rid of Seward politically. And Stanton did a bunch of political fixing, which is what he was good at. And we put the whole timeline together, and it left us with one conclusion. that we know Dick saying Henry Wilson. Henry Wilson wasn't in the cabinet. And Lincoln said somebody in my cabinet. That doesn't lead to, it was only two people that hung around Rose, and it was Chase and Seward. And she talks in her book constantly. She uses the, she refers to Seward more than any single person in her book. And that's where her venom is all at. And a woman scorned, Rose was not a woman to be scorned. But she's fun. I mean, superhuman powers of seduction, almost won the Civil War by herself, by her prowess of her mind and her body. And we think a movie should be made of her, and we have treatments, and we just, that's our dream.
Sounds more like it should be a series.
That's what we really want, is a series about the coming of the Civil War. That is exactly what should be made. Not the war.
Yeah, it's almost like the show Turn, and how popular that has. So yeah, this would definitely have interest.
Well, and right now, if our country, everyone talking about the fact we're headed toward another civil war, that, how did we get there? People forget that in 1856, the big-haired celebrity didn't win, and we went with the old, craggy politician. In this case, we went with the big-haired celebrity instead of the old, craggy politician. But, you know, John C. Fremont was as a biggest celebrity as Donald Trump was. And they both had big hair. And really attractive wives. They're very, the only difference with Jesse Benton, Fremont was very mouthy and known, where Melania stays back. But the, you know, Hillary's a lot like James Buchanan. You know, most qualified person, that's what they said Buchanan was. Most qualified person ever to run. And so it's interesting to us, but there's a lot of cool stuff, from the poisoning of Buchanan to Sickles killing Francis Scott Key's son in the streets in an affair, and Rose was messed up in that. She was into everything. I mean, so neat stuff. But anyways, if you go to Gettysburg, if you want some people in really good true garb that would maybe bring the spirits out, my wife would love that. That would be really fun.
Well, usually we try and go in April, toward the middle or end of April. And I don't have a place lined up yet, but we do Mr. G's Ice Cream sometimes when we go there. There is a field hospital. What's that farm,
Dave
Barbara?
David Stewart?
Yeah, the Dave Stewart Farm was a field hospital after the war, as the Confederates were retreating from Gettysburg. A lot of the wounded was there. We've done our show from that place, which is very haunted also. So we do from quite a few different places down that area. So
you can't do it on the national field, sadly.
No, you can't get out there. But you got to be able to have a connection to be able to do the show. Unfortunately, we didn't have one tonight. Anyway, I lived in Wilmington for about 20 years, so I've done a lot of running around down there, but that was way back before I had anything to do with the paranormal. So when I lived down there, mainly all I done was go fishing. So, but
nice place.
Yeah, it's a nice place, but it has grown way too much. I wouldn't want to live there anymore. There's too many people, and the roads just have not kept up with the amount of traffic. So I might go down there and visit sometime, but that's about it. Barbara, I know you got a whole bunch of questions here to ask, so I'm not going to hog everything.
Well, I'm just curious as to how you got involved in UFO. Especially this case.
Well, it was Unsolved Mysteries, and then the fact that I saw, after we did Gore Orphanage, I started looking for urban legends within the within certain size metro areas, and I thought we'll start with Pittsburgh, and so we started looking through, and nothing was as big or as important as Kecksburg. I mean, it could have been anything. It could have been Jock Yablonsky's murder or something like that. But we, Kecksburg, we thought, had all the elements we were looking for in a story that would be marketable. And so that's what drew us to it. I mean, it's, and I had a fascination since I was a kid. I forget, it was like 1983, 84 when it showed, so I was like 14. And I remember seeing the Unsolved Mysteries and Robert Stack's voice telling me how scary this all was.
Yeah.
And
I think, His voice is amazing. There's a lot of those series that I think got a lot of people involved in Search of with Leonard Nimoy and Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, I love In Search of. I love seeing the Sasquatch move across the screen and the Loch Ness Monster in the opening credits. I love the music for that.
I think it got a lot of people involved in both Unexplained Mysteries, but also in film and television.
Yeah, I think that's what really started the paranormal part on TV.
Well, Leonard Nimoy did it.
Oh, I think, In Search Of was just the perfect show. So you got more questions, and you got the name Barbara. Barbara is the zombie girl, or the girl in
I heard that, Lady. And I am available.
Yes. For and I'll do it for a scale, so
I am available, huh?
There's
well, you know, if you get them all in there, then I'll have a whole bunch of people when I'm doing my show say, oh, all these people are on my show, man.
Interestingly enough, Cody, Henry wrote a short story many, many years ago, and as I'm a script writer, he asked me to see whether or not I could adapted into a screenplay, and it's a short, it's only like 30 pages, but, and I literally, when I was writing it, I'm like, oh my God, this role is so Maria Olson, but Henry, it was like a treatment, the only two characters actually had names, so I had to come up with names of other people that the story simply said brother, sister, so one of them I named Barbara after Barbara here on the show, and since Maria's ghost comes back to kill her, at one point I literally having her say, I'm come to get you, Barbara.
we did the same thing in Pro Wrestlers versus Zombies as a joke, like that we named the nurse Barbara, and then we have someone say that to her, and then it's all a joke, and then she gets captured and her heart gets pulled out and she gets turned into a zombie. We had a little fun with that.
So you're famous already, Barb.
Well, of course.
I fell off there for a sec.
Our time seems, well, we still got about 25 minutes, something like that. So, Barbara, go ahead. You've got tons of questions, I know.
Don't you? Well, of course. Number one is... Are you getting a lot of buy-in from the people around the area? And are you getting a lot of flack from different organizations, I should say?
We are getting a lot of support from people in the area. When the Post-Gazette ran the story that we were going to make the film, the day they released it, Ben Roethlisberger, they ran a story that Ben Roethlisberger might retire as the quarterback of the Steelers. And we were shared and liked 17 times more often than Ben.
So then what do you think about...
And that told us the power of the story. And I have a friend that works at the Post-Gazette, and she told me anything we read...
emailreviewer.com, get an autograph copy of my book. How to Become a Successful Private Investigator.
We're going to film Kingwood, West Virginia. You can just go to emailreviewer.com. And the people have been incredible in supporting the film. You know, we started our crowdfunding yesterday, and we achieved 10% of our goal on the first day. And so that was really exciting. You know, I mean, always your first day is always your coolest day, but people were immediately like, we've got to be involved in this. And, you know, the Harrier jet, lots and lots of things keep coming forward, and we have a state senator that's going to help us make the presentation to some other bodies to get involved. And Pennsylvania Manufacturing Association, I've talked to the president of that, and he's going to help us make presentations. So I mean, that's some nice heavy hitters that think this needs to be done.
Are you going to make this into a feature movie?
It is a feature film. I mean, I have never made a short, never had an interest in shorts. I mean, I think that's great because I feel that you if you're going to use someone's money, you have to attempt to try and make a profit. Doesn't mean you will, but and features have the ability to make money. So I've never written a script other than features, which is really weird. So, it's a feature film, and it's part of what we hope to be able to do, a series of films on existing urban legends and the unexplained.
And all within the Pennsylvania area?
No, we want to go around the country to these existing urban legends. And so we have started to pick out which ones we want to do. And they're not all aliens, they're ghosts. One I would love to do, but it doesn't fit the model I built because it had the geographic area to support it, is about the little green men out in Kentucky. I just think that's so funny about the good old boys trapped in the house shooting at them, at the goblins. I want to do that. I want to do that myself because I grew up. My wife does not let me speak the way I grew up because she thinks it's. I know how to talk a certain way, and I just that these things are just very simple for me. But my wife, she thinks that I'm a little crazy when I talk that way, and I would love to just be standing there going, "I'm gonna get him, yeah!" That'd be a lot of fun.
There's a lot of strange stories like that. There's one up in Miami at Oxford of a motorcycle rider. There's a place on the road that you go to up there, and you'll see the motorcycle coming headlight up over a little hill. Next thing you know, it's just gone, disappears. I know lots of people that's been there and seen it. I've even had a sheriff deputies. They always go up there when they get reports, and they seen it one night themselves, and one walked down through the woods to come up behind where it was at, and when he got back up on the road, there was nothing there, and it just disappeared between the two deputies. So there's things like that happens all the time.
Oh, there's you know, when I went to Bethany College, they had tons of ghost stories, and I remember we had one about a trolley wreck, which is a story told again and again in different areas. And, you know, we had a little lake that her lover had left her, and then she killed herself, and she still haunts there. But the ones I found most powerful were, like, people that I could verify that the girl got blown up in a lab. And I know when I worked there, I never liked to enter the area where she had died. It always felt uneasy. And I hated it. I had, on security, I had to check every part of the building. So I had to go in there, and I would race out of it.
Just sort of like, oh, this looks good.
Yeah, I had to hit the time clock. So I had to go in there. I'd get in trouble. So I had to race down the steps, click it, and there was no one else over in that part of the building. So you were always there by yourself. So if you heard something like Jeff had talked about, where you know, you hear the footsteps or something, you knew because you just locked the door behind you. You're the only person down there, and it was all the way in the back of the building because we had to check for the fire code, just in case something, because they had chemistry labs back there. I hated that building. I hated the whole hall of fire.
There's a famous. Building in called Ringwood Manor in New Jersey, near Oakland and in Ringwood, that is a museum. And my friend Bob and his sister Karen went to visit there, and they were looking around. And Bob goes up to the second floor, and he got this the same kind of oppressive get out feeling. He's like, "All right, that's weird." He went downstairs. He said, told Karen, says, "Go upstairs and let me know what you think." And she just went upstairs, and she came down saying, "Oh, something doesn't want us up there."
Yeah, it's
Go ahead.
That's never fun. I just, you know, the feeling of hair standing on end and the uncomfortableness of it. You know, and people deny this. We're all okay. It's all in our imagination. You know, and I don't believe that's right. I think we spend more time denying. I mean, how does music make us feel? Why does music make us feel something? You know, we're very emotional, spiritual creatures.
Yes.
We're not logical.
Now, if you're looking for something like that, for a story kind of thing, there is one that's in Florida, and you've probably heard of it before. It's called Robert the Doll.
Yay!
It is so bad that it is, I guess, behind a glass case. Because
no, don't make it sound like he's Annabelle. I mean, he's a museum piece. No. He's in a museum. And
I didn't watch the movie Annabelle.
But he's a very famous Key West, Florida doll that was owned by a wealthy son. And as time went on, it seemed like the doll had a life of its own. And when people were home alone, they could hear footsteps upstairs. People outside would see Robert apparently moving past the window on his own and things like that. And when he was eventually became a piece in the that city's museum, if you take photos of him without asking his permission, all kinds of terrible things happen. There are letters all across the walls from people who had been to the museum asking Robert to forgive them for taking a photo. And one of my favorite episodes of Marla Brooks, who's the author of the book that the commercial for the Cobblywobbles, she had the curator of the museum on the phone. And the woman was at the museum after dark, alone. And in the background at one point, you can actually hear a male voice going, "Robert, Robert, I'm Robert."
Yeah. I've got the recording of that. It says, "My name is Robert."
Oh, that is very neat.
Yeah.
I'll post a photo. I think he's got an account on Facebook, so. And I'm certainly on Twitter, I'm
sure. Robert.
Yeah, if you look up Robert.
Robert
Doll,
follows me on Twitter.
He's famous.
I got a weird question for you guys, okay? Since you know more about the paranormal than I do. Does P.T. Barnum's ghost haunt anywhere?
That's a darn good question.
I don't know. Have you heard
anything
about that?
Well, I know that the Clown College in Florida is supposedly haunted, but I don't know if it's by P.T. Barnum or not. And I think it's...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't even think it's the Clown College anymore. I think it's a cosmetology school. So, yeah.
Oh, that's a thing. Much better be at Clown College. But I portray P.T. Barnum, and I look like him. So I'm very – P.T. Barnum and Judah Benjamin both look alike, which is really weird because I look like both of them. So I'm interested if P.T. Barnum's ghost is somewhere, because I'd love to go and, like, hang out with P.T. Barnum's ghost.
Huh.
That would be fun.
I'll have to do some research and get back to you on that one.
Yeah, but I haven't heard of anything being haunted by him. No.
I mean, of all the ghost people to haunt people, he would be. It's hard to believe he didn't come back as a ghost and try to keep attention on himself.
I think one of the problems with that probably is because all circuses are dying out, and they can't have, I guess, the big animals anymore. Because of all the animal rights. So,
it's horrible. I have a friend on Facebook who's the head of the Circus Association, which I didn't know. And so he was really angry when he's writing all these posts. And I'm like, wow, that's fascinating. I didn't know that's what you did. Because he was someone, a friend of me on Facebook. And he's like, the guy in charge of Circus Association.
Yeah.
I don't know what his name is, but it's fun to read.
That's bad like that. A lot of people like the circus or the carnivals. Myself, I never did care too much to go into a circus. Well, it wasn't my thing. But that's okay.
It was neither mine. But I like P.T. Barnum because my wife does Jenny Lind. And so we do Jenny Lind and P.T. Barnum together.
So what do you think the government did with whatever it was they took out of the woods at Kecksburg?
Okay, everybody believes it went to Wright-Patterson Airfield because that's where everything went. I think it's illogical, and I'll tell you why. If I'm trying to hide something, the last thing I'm going to do in 1965 is drive it from southwestern Pennsylvania through the night, so partly during the day, all the way over to Wright-Patterson and Dayton. It takes too long. Instead, they could have took a vehicle that way to make everybody think it's that, but I believe they took it to Camp Dawson, which is actually in Preston County, and that's what we have in the story. Because Camp Dawson, if you read Tom Clancy's, where all the Black Ops have, and they've been doing training there for years. And it's actually now Homeland Defense has a big operation there. And so that would make more sense. We have this one place where we're doing all this training with Green Berets and Black Ops, and it happens to be 40 minutes from where it landed. Why would I not take it there and secure it and then move it later if I'm going to move it over to right?
Did they have an airfield there?
They have an airfield there.
See, they could put it on a plane right there and flew it over.
Yep. They don't need to take it on a truck to Wright-Patterson. I think people got too obsessed with the only airfield. If you ask most Americans what field can they name, they'll name Wright-Patterson. And it became this place that they knew stuff went on. And if everybody knows where it's going, I'm going to misdirect you. I'm going to make you look there while I'm moving it over here. That's what you do if you're being smart about it. And so that's why we have Camp Dawson. It's also the county we're filming in. And my family owns land by it. So I technically own land by it. So that's kind of fun, too.
Well, I don't know why they don't fly things out there to Area 51. I mean, they've got storage out there where people has no clue what's in those places. It's my understanding that some of those hangars, they can go down like 25 stories underground. I guess they have a lot of UFO stuff there.
Well, there's a lot of mixed reports that Area 51 has been moving stuff to a different location, literally called Area 52. And so that there's both, it could be just disinformation that it may not have as much stuff as it used to in order to distract people, but it's still there so that people think this is where everything is when actually it's now somewhere else.
Yeah, it makes a great cover story. If I have you looking here, you're not looking over there.
Right.
And most things they do are pretty logical. If you just work through their reasoning, you'll end up where things should be. And if it's all the heaps over there, leave some. Go ahead.
How do we know that you're not really working with the Black Ops people and you're just throwing out disinformation?
I'm too Scotch-Irish.
Best answer yet.
I'll tell you how Scotch-Irish I am. I was told by a friend, he said, you will have to vote for Donald Trump. And I said, why? And I said, he said, emotionally, you won't be able to avoid it. And that's what I ended up doing. And I actually called Donald Trump an asshole. And they put it on Fox News. So, and at the same time, I was running as a delegate for it. So if that gives you any idea about how it is to be Scotch-Irish, He's an asshole, but I'm voting for him.
Well, I guess I did that 23andMe thing or whatever it is, and I am Irish and a little bit of German and just all over the map, you might say. So I have no idea where I'm really from. So
yeah, mine said I was mostly Scandinavian because of the Normans and the family tree back to the Lestranges and that. Mm-hmm. Which actually I told our actress, that Ricky Nelson's granddaughter, Remy, when I told her that I'm descended from Guy Lestrange, she said, "Oh, you must be magical." I thought that was a fun comment, but you know, I guess.
When that craft landed, was there any reports that the craft itself was damaged?
There was the blue smoke coming off of it. So whether the undercarriage where it hit the ground was damaged, that's a lot harder. But it had the acorn shape when they held it up. So apparently, if it had dents, it didn't bend in a side or anything like that. It still had the acorn shape, which means, as Dr. Malden told us, it was running off electromagnetic. Because he said, obviously with that shape, you're running off electromagnetic. And I went, of course, obviously. I had no clue. You know, he's the scientist. But he said that's the reason you would have that shape. But it had maintained it, so I doubt there's any big damage of anything significant.
Have you seen the, I don't know if it was Ancient Aliens or what, but that at one time during World War II, there were time travel experiments, and they used something in the shape of a bell, or in this case, looking at the maquette mm-hmm. of the acorn, that shape?
Yeah, the Nazi bell.
Yeah, the Nazi bell. So was their ship similar in that kind of a shape, that they might have been more travelers than extraterrestrials?
Absolutely. And we thought about incorporating that into the story, but then it's still being aliens, like that the colonel thinks this because he saw them disappear. We had this whole front part, but it would cost so much more to make. But I find it funny. Okay, I'm Nazis. I'm going to escape to the future with 1945 technology to conquer it with old technology. That I always found weird. But okay, I'm Nazis, and I'm going to go to the future. And my big master plan is I end up in small town Pennsylvania. That's pretty much a fail.
I think it was more theorized that the Nazis had found the technology from people from our future going back there, and somehow they tried retrofitting it or something. Reverse engineering is the word I was looking for. So there weren't Nazis coming to Kecksburg, but probably still from the future, distant future, time travelers who just didn't listen to Siri when she was giving directions.
Yeah, I mean, I love where I live, but this is no place to conquer the future from.
But it could be a good place. It could be a good place to land unseen.
Well, they obviously failed.
Well, it's not like they landed on the White House lawn, you know, the old joke about that.
But they didn't realize that everybody in the town of Kecksburg would be in the woods that night waiting to see them land.
Exactly. Having a huge beer party or something. Mm. Wow.
It was beer season. We looked that up. So So that's part of the three boys in the woods are out deer hunting that we have in the script, because we want deer season. Why would they be in the woods? And that might be why so many people were in the woods. They were all out in their Woolrich outfits, wandering around with their rifles, heavily armed, waiting for something to land from outer space. You know, it would have been, we could have made this a comedy, like the Nazis land, we're going to conquer the future, and then they get shot by young boys from southwestern PA.
Well, there's a concept in time travel that Hitler has an exemption, that you cannot go back to kill Hitler. And there's a cartoon strip of these two Nazis guarding the office Hitler is in, and they say, you know, And it's like pre-World War II. And they're like, do you really think, you know, this is the best man for the job? He says, I don't know. What do you mean? He seems to be okay. And all of a sudden, this portal opens up, and this guy comes out in futuristic outfit, and they gun him down. They're like, I don't know, all these time travelers coming up trying to kill him. Do you think that's telling us something?
That's funny. I mean, if you've read comics, if you remember in DC Comics, had a guy named Per Degation that went back in time all the time, and he had red hair, looked like Donald Trump, and wore Nazi boots and jack boots and the whole thing. But he finally figured out if he couldn't kill someone, he started killing their friends or anybody important to him. So he altered their path that way, which was really neat.
Yeah. Wow.
Which I saw it in a comic book, and I thought it was a really cool way to destroy a hero, was to destroy the people most important to him, and then they ceased to exist in his life. Uh-huh. And that altered his whole – he wasn't a hero anymore.
Interesting.
Huh. Well, our time has quickly been running right on down. We're going to – in just a minute, let you give out all your information, how people can follow you and find you and see what's going on. And then we'll give out all our stuff. We want you to stay on until after we're off, you might say. And then we'll talk with you for just a second. Next week, we will be live from the Bell Nursing Home in Bolton, Ohio. And that's a great place. I haven't been back there for quite a few years, but I can't wait to get back. And I've always got some good stuff from there. And doing the show live, providing we can get on Centova, we'll be live. So anyway, Cody, why don't you go ahead and give out all your information.
Especially about your Kickstarter.
Okay. Yeah. We have our Indiegogo, and the easiest way to find it, actually, go to Facebook and find Kexburg the movie, and all the links are there because they give you those long things. Under Indiegogo, it's Kexburg, it's Time for the Truth. But find us on Facebook, Kexburg the movie. We're the only site that way, and you'll see this really green picture with an aliens or the spaceship and John Murphy looking inside. They can follow me. What's that?
Kind of a previz photo? Is that one you mean?
Yeah, we have one where he's staring in and seeing that the army is watching the spaceship. It's not a photo; it's a cover art drawn by Gary Kissel. And you can also just find me on Facebook because I have followers and all that fun stuff. And it's under my name, Cody Knotts, or I'm on Twitter under Cody Knotts. We do have a Kexburg UFO on that, or email me at kexburgufo@gmail.com. I get all those emails personally, and I respond to everybody who sends in. So love to talk to people.
And
absolutely.
How soon will you be filming after you get the other two spots?
Our plan is March, April of
next year.
And we've actually set a release date for September of 2019. We've actually picked the spot for the premiere in John Murphy's, where he worked at in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, which is right outside Pittsburgh. So we are pushing ourselves to hit every date and make this happen.
All right. Well, Jeff, won't you give out our stuff?
Yeah, well, our official website is theparanormalview.com. We're on Facebook, just facebook.com/theparanormalview. We have links to the podcast as well as interesting, weird, or sciencey articles across which I come during the week. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Real Badger, where I do all kinds of silly stuff.
Well, that sounds good. Barbara, you got anything to add?
Nope, you can see us all on our Paranormal View Facebook page.
Yeah. There you go. And our time, we're sorry that we didn't able to broadcast live, but you'll be able to pick us up. So listen to us anyway, and the podcast will be up shortly. We will also play this as one of our shows soon. So with that, this will be Henry Foister.
And Barbara Gould.
And we will see you next week at the same time. So good night, everybody. You've been listening to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. Join us again next week at the same time for more of The Paranormal View.